programmi uħor storja ħra. Nittama li kelkom ġima, li kell aktar suċċessi biex nejtek mill-li dizappuntina. Nisma bħalkom, nixtar bħalkom, diversi issues li kienu għaddejjin fil-medja tagħna u waħda mill-issues li donna nisimgħu b'mod konsistenti hija dik li hija magħrufa bħala l-immigrazzjoni irregolari jew illegali, jiena għandi ftit. Forsi konna ċans id-dibattu anki dawn iż-żewġ termini differenti. Nisma kemm nisma nibqa' naffaxxina ruħi b'dak li qed jiġri mhux biss madwar l-ibħra tagħna imma fid-dinja kollha kemm hi. Illum il-moviment tan-nies minħabba gwerer, minħabba faqar, minħabba klima hija tremenda, moviment kbir, ċaqli kbir, li għandu fl-opinjoni tiegħi anke l-pożittiv tiegħu, però għandu wkoll il-konsegwenzi tiegħu wkoll. Biex nitkellmu fuq dawn l-issues u kif jaffettwaw iż-żgħażagħ, miegħi għandi lil Miss Maria Pisani li hija li taħdem mal-IOM. Konna ċans nitkellmu ftit fuq l-IOM u hija wkoll professional youth worker u issa tkompli anki l-istudji tagħha fil-level ta' masters u għandi miegħi żagħżugħ mill-West Africa li jismu Muhammed u sir qed jinafit anki l-perspettiva ta' dan li qed jiġri fid-dinja u ngħidu hekk anki forsi f'termini lokali fejn tidħol dil-issue. Jiena se naqleb l-Ingliż biex inkun nista' nikkomunika maż-żewġ mistednin tiegħi. I would like to welcome you to my radio show. Welcome to Campus FM. Maybe I'll start with you, Mohammed. Can you tell us why do you think people feel the need to leave their country of origin? To leave their families, to leave their friends, to leave their roots, whatever those are, the people they love, to move to other countries. What motivates? What is happening? Difficult one, eh?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people migrated from their country, but not that they have the intention, you know, to leave. Let's say, for example, I would like to give story about myself. You know, I was not having planned to leave my country because I have things doing. I have, you know, a lot of things that I keep me busy all the times. But due to the fear of persecution, and I don't want, you know, lost my life as I'm young, you know, it's too early for me to die now. That's why I just decided to get out and escape. Maybe I'll have some other place, not even Malta, or I mean anywhere that can be safer for me, that I can protect myself, my life. So that's why I just leave, you know. I mean, that's why I just decided to leave, because I was having a lot of problems, you know. I mean, that would go to reach the end of my life. Maybe I will die, so that's why I leave.
So it says, as basic as that, you need to leave your country because there is a risk that you die.
Yes, I told you, it's a story, long story about my personal problem, because I have a personal problem that make me to migrate from my country. Not just because of thinking of another life or thinking of the European life or other things, but I have a personal problem which that make me to, you know, motivate me to get out without, you know, plan, without intention, just like that. Mm-hmm. So, and the problem is, yeah, I don't want, you know, reveal it exactly now to everybody to listen to where I'm, why I left, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking. So,
Okay, let me try to understand more. I'm really interested in your story, but more than your story, I would like you to tell us more about why people. How old are you, Mohammed? Just to put the listeners in the picture. How old are you?
No, and I'm 23.
So at 23,
yeah,
you left your country.
Yeah.
Where do you find the energy, the motivation to leave your country at such a young age?
You know, the fear that I have, that's what motivates me, because of my life, to save my life. I cross, you know, I have horrors, hard journey that I have never experienced in my life. I crossed the desert, I saw a lot of people dying, maybe 55% of the people before even they get to the sea, they die in the desert, and only maybe 50% arrive in the seaside, and out of the 50%, maybe just 10% arrive in the European and the rest die in the sea. So in the desert, you're moving on the street, you find dead body if your car, because there is no compass, there is no anything. You're moving just in the night, just like that, without anything. So when you're moving, if your car has a problem, you die, all because there is no water, there is nobody who help you, nothing. And we come to the sea. When we arrive in Libya, we find a way to get out of Libya because you know how the condition in Libya. So and we cannot get a permit to stay in Libya, so we have to risk our life, cross the Mediterranean Sea, and come anywhere we find ourselves, not in Malta or in Italy.
Without anywhere. Compass, without anything. You just...
Yeah, no, in the sea we use compass, but normally the problem is most of the people driving the boat, they don't have the experience, they only claim to know because they just want to leave, you know, everybody want to leave, that's why we just come like that.
How was your, how long is a typical journey on a boat from Libya to Malta? How long would that
take? It depend on how it comes. Sometimes people spend 5 days, 10 days, 15 days, 4 days. Some they even spend 34, 35 hours to arrive in Malta.
And you have this boatload full of people and they have to live together for all those days?
Yeah, they have to stay together. Some boat you find, like our boat, we are 27 and it's very small, maybe 9 meter like that. 9 meter, very small. So we left in the night. When... You know, you don't know exactly the road because you covered everything. You don't know anything. So when we are up in the seaside, we just take into the boat and the sea, you know, how the sea is very rough. So I was thinking of not going because I'm afraid, but there is nothing I can do. If I stay there, it's a problem. Maybe the people who do the connection, they will kill me there because they will be thinking that I'm going to reveal the secret when I go back because maybe the police will catch me. So I have to enter the boat. When we get into the boat started driving. I mean, the captain started the mission. We started journey around maybe 4 days in the water. So that's how we come. We arrive here very close to Malta, maybe 9 miles like that. We was not having a pile. So, I mean, when Italian fishing boat come and tell us that we should enter Malta, it's very close. When we get into Malta, our plan was to get the foil and continue with our journey. So the soldier come and arrest us, tell us that we should just go into the Malta, no problem, because we are inside the territory. Tell them, no, we don't want to stay in Malta because we're thinking of, you know, operate, because some of them, they have the brothers, they tell them that maybe if we come, we are going to be locked up in detention. So that's what people are afraid. So they say we should go to Italia. We are planning. They say, no, we have to go and see our friends and stay together with them, see them very nice, no problem, no other anything. So that's how we come, and we go to detention direct.
I see.
Yeah.
Can I ask something?
Sure, Maya.
50% don't even make it?
Yeah.
Do they know that before? Do they know what their chances are of just crossing the desert? How many people don't make it just across the desert?
No, many people don't know. Listen, you know, there is a way, two ways people crossing the desert. Some people use... you know, mountain organ. Some people cross the mountain organ. This is the hard one, the hard journey, whereby the car will take you direct there.
It's a mountain.
Yeah, it's a big mountain in Africa. So when you reach there, the car will stop because the car cannot climb there. They only show you that you go here, it's your road. If you follow this way, maybe you die. So many people start climbing the mountain, and when they climb the mountain, some people die. You've met a lot of people, according to what I had, because I know Palau there. But I had this story about it, that people you met, majority die in the, on the mountain. It's about 2 days journey, or just the mountain. You climb the mountain, that is one day, and you go off one day down. Maybe they almost 3 days on just the mountain. When you go down, that's when you start seeing the light. It's pretty far. You stay some people there because there is no water, there is nothing. Many die there. And the other way we come, that's where you pay the money and you enter the small car, about 35 people in small hillocks, you know. So they start driving. some people die, many die in, I mean, inside the bus, you know, I mean, the car we use. If you go, you are moving on the street, inside the desert, the fuel finish or the water, you have to die, that's all, because nobody will help you. Even if somebody come, maybe another car is coming, they will not help you. There is nothing they can do for you. They just leave you there. No telephone, nothing. It's about 15 days, some 20 days without seeing the city.
Everybody to himself.
Yeah.
Nobody's. Maria, let's give some breathing space to Mohammed as well. You've worked in this field. You've been working in this field. You've dedicated, I would say, it's an understatement if I say that you're dedicating your life to this situation. What give us a snapshot of what's going on? What is going on? We tend to just see the boat coming up to our shores. These 27-30 people coming out of a boat. They go into detention. And then sort of that's it. And then we're there grumbling and bothered and whatever. But if you had to give a snapshot of what is happening in the whole world, why do people need to get away from their country? What's wrong? What's happening? I know this would take us
a snapshot.
It has to be a very quick Polaroid snapshot.
I'm trying to think of the best way that I can summarize what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Human migration, there's nothing new about human migration.
It's been happening.
We that's what we do. That's what human beings do. They migrate. I think what we see on the newspapers or what we read on the newspapers and what we see on the TV are faces, numbers, and statistics.
Mm.
What I see is the human story behind this. What I see are young people. This is something that I
do we get with all the young people?
The vast majority of the people that are coming across now, we're going to speak specifically about those people that are coming, what we call the boat people, uh-huh. if you like, are young people. They would, according to our national youth policy, fall within
the
group of young people. And so this is something that I think is overlooked.
It is.
They're young people, and their age is not recognized. Mm. What I see is a human... I don't want to sound too dramatic in any way. But it is dramatic. And it's a story of human strength, courage, dreams... I've worked with a lot of young people, but dreams are a big thing. And tragedy and great sadness at times as well. And I think it's this human story that's lost somewhere along the way.
Mm.
Maybe at the beginning it was seen more as a tragedy, a couple of people, two, three numbers, and then you start seeing bigger numbers and slowly it becomes about statistics. But I remind myself every day that I was born in Europe. And so my life has taken a certain route, if you like, not because I was intelligent and chose where I was going to be born, but because I happened to be born in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And other people who have no choice as to where they were born are not born with the same circumstances and opportunities, and yet, despite their circumstances, have the strength to try to have something better. And I think, doesn't that represent young people all across the world? They're at the beginning of their life. Mohammed is 23. When he started his journey, he was even younger. He wants something more, be it safety, be it whatever it is. Whether the forced migration can be for many different reasons, as you explained at the beginning in your introduction in Maltese. It could be famine, it could be poverty, it could be natural disaster, it could be persecution, it can be war, it could be conflict. In Malta, it could be young people in Malta perhaps feel that they don't have the opportunities that they may have in Northern Europe. I mean, people move for different reasons, but the circumstances under which they travel are to a certain degree determined by the life that they happened to be born into.
Mohammed, what are the stories that you hear about detention. We hear a lot about detention. And a lot of NGOs like JRS, Jesuit Refugee Service, I would say United Nations, IOM, we had journalists, we had loads of people saying things about detention. Now, the first thing is that I'd like to ask you, do you agree that the government, can you see the reasoning why government keeps people in detention, or do you think it doesn't serve a purpose? From people you've talked to, from your friends, from people who've been to detention?
Yeah, first time when I arrived in this country, I was locked up in detention. I was, a little bit crazy because I have never been into, this is my first time to be in detention. Even in having any, I don't have any police, any criminal record. Good. Okay. So I tried to consult some NGOs, ask them, why should I be locked in detention? Because I did not see why, because I don't have any information about it. So they tell me that the reason why is because I enter Malta illegally. That's why this is the reason why I kept in detention. So I have to keep silent because I have nothing to do. But I keep going about 3 months. So I did not go to the interview, and I have become more crazy because I'm thinking it's, I don't know when this is going to end. I heard that a lot of people stay long, but I was, a little bit crazy. After about 3 months, up to six months, I start, disturbing, asking them, why, please, I need to get out because I'm tired of staying in detention. I'm not doing anything, and my brain is, paid enough, and I have a lot of books, reading, doing different things, but up to reaching the stage that my brain completely is not working. If I want to read books, I feel like to cry, I don't understand anything. So I keep disturbing them, telling them, please, they should, take me to the interview. Because that's the only way out. Maybe if I get my interview, maybe I will get out easy. So they say, it's first come, first serve. And my number was very far, And I have to stay long in detention. Then after I was about 8 months, I think, that's when New Year came. So I was, thinking, I have some people like Maria, when they come, I tell them something, they give me advice, many of them. If I tell them my story, many things, so they try to tell me I should just take it easy. They give me, give me advice, tell me what to do and other things. After we complete, the end of, 2006, I was in detention, first year, New Year. People try to organize something in detention so we feel, entertainment, forget about the fast, forget about the tension. A lot of people bring some ideas. Then from there, I start thinking, what should I do now? Because I'm tired of reading. I cannot read anymore. What am I going to do to, keep myself entertained, forget about some other things? So I have a friend that we say, okay, let's, I tell him, I say, okay, what do we do? Because on the day of the New Year, the night, some people try to bring some of their traditional, local music and other, English music and other things. Try to feel, I feel entertained, I feel okay the day because I forget everything because I like music, After maybe the second day of New Year, that's first day of New Year, then I call my friend, I tell him, listen, let's just start thinking, doing something. I think it's very nice because I speak English and I can write and I know music is nothing about because I feel entertained. So let me just start writing something about this life we are living now. He said, no, I am not a musician. You're not a musician. How can you? I said, that's all it. And when I do it, I call you. So I just sing it for you. So I feel, I'm entertained. I'm okay. I'm not going to think too much because I don't have anything that would keep me busy. So he said, no, what? I say, okay, maybe it will be easy because the most easiest music I think is rap, so I can maybe try to write something like that, hip hop. He said, no, okay, go and do it. If you do, I'll come together with you and sit down and see how you do it. Maybe you can do, but I don't know anything. I cannot do it. Maybe all I can do is help you if I see how you do it. If you show me, I will cobble together and do something. He said, okay, no problem. So I had to go and sit down, get a paper, try to write some stories about being in detention and all that. Thing. So I feel that I get some, you know, different tracks I write just like that. So at times when they often us, because they often us 1 hour, 30 minutes outside.
Just 30 minutes outside?
Yeah, 1 hour, 30 minutes then, 1 hour, before they increase it to 6 hours. Yeah, that's when you come first time, if you're not in some different, you know, camps, not all the camps, some different camps, you stay inside only 1 hour, 30 minutes, that's where you come outside, and after you go inside, you stay inside.
Doing what?
You have to be locked inside, you know.
No, doing what? Nothing.
Doing nothing, just sleeping, sitting down, doing something. So this is what make me, you know, to start doing.
Drives you crazy, drives you up the wall.
Yeah, yeah. So I try to write something and call him. When we go outside, we get some other part of the places where we are living, some people playing football, volleyball, and other different things. So I call him, I start, you know, making some, you know, mumming, practicing the music like that. He says it's nice, so why didn't I continue to be writing?
Yeah.
I tell him, I say, no, I'm not a musician. It's just conditions that make me to do it, so I just do it. Maybe let me just cut small. I think it will be okay. One of the the track I put is, let me just cut small. I said, a person wanna be a nominee, so there could be a jubilee. A neighbor wanna be a RPG, but always wanna be in the bulletin. So that's how there I continue.
Yeah.
You
it's
know,
rap.
Yeah, it's rap. So that's how, you know, I continue making some differences, just to keep myself, you know, busy. That's all. And then after when I finish the time, I come out for my freedom.
And once you, once people are out of their detention, of detention, what happens? Are you? Do you have enough knowledge
about what?
Because about everything. I mean, how? I just can't imagine the other way around. I get a boat, go to Nigeria, I'm placed in a camp with people I don't know. Some of them not even people who I understand their language.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, after an interview, they open the gate, and they tell me, you're okay, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
I would be lost. I would be as lost outside as I am inside. How do people feel the fact when they are out of detention? There's a sense of freedom. There's a sense of, I can breathe. That's okay. That's understandable. But are young people prepared for the life outside?
Yeah, you know, life always like to be free. We left our country because of problem.
Yeah.
Well, we was having a freedom in our country. You know, there is no place where you can go more than your place, more than where your country is, because that's where you have everything. You have the right of everything. So when you come and you've been locked up in detention, you stay in detention, if they said your freedom is out, you should come out for the freedom. Come out, you find a new life, new different things. Some people still have the mentality of that, you know. It's not easy, you know, to stay in detention because with different people, different languages, they don't understand your language, they don't understand what you are saying. That's what make me to learn Arabic, because majority people came from Libya, they speak Arabic, and they don't speak English, and I don't speak Arabic then. Even single, I don't speak. So when I was inside detention, I have to, you know, learn the language so I can be able to communicate with, you know, with other people. So that's what I normally do. And when I come outside from the prison, I find it, they took me to where they normally keep us. And I find the paintings, I go different places, I go to get myself all right, because long time I have, you know, lost the memory completely. Yeah. So I have to go to see different places to help myself okay, and
To orient yourself
in a
society which is probably very different from your motherland.
Yes.
This is turning out to be a very interesting program. Stay tuned, because after this, there is more to come. Maria, this is a big question that people keep asking. Is there a possibility, is it at all possible, that people coming from a different, from different societies, from different cultures, from different religions, can we ever have a society where people are actually living together in a, in harmony? And
you just mentioned something, Mohammed, in detention.
Yeah.
About how you learn the language. Mm. When we think of Africa, I think we have this horrible habit of Africa. You know, like,
yeah,
it's...
Yeah.
Africa is an example of where there is so much diversity, different languages, different religions.
People look different. And people look different from one country to another.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Different cultures. And yet, even under those adverse conditions, you still manage to live together.
Yeah, because...
I'm not saying there weren't problems. There was ups, there was downs, but you still managed to live together. I'm a returned migrant, so I was brought up in a different country, in a different culture as well. And I experienced that to a certain degree. I believe that, yes, people can live together. Different cultures can live together, different groups of people can live together, as long as you leave dialogue and communication.
Mm-hmm. But are there countries that that can boast of this issue? I mean, some time back I was reading an article which said that London was
a multicultural society.
It was almost the prototype of how different people can actually live together and create society together. But yeah, that has been disrupted as well, even following different issues and different situations that happened in these last years. Can we really have, are there examples of societies that can be models where people are living together and they come from different...
I think London backgrounds. Is still an example, mm-hmm, of a healthy, diverse city. Canada has been successful. And if you look around, there are many countries. I think sometimes media and sensationalism, it tends to stick in our minds, and mm-hmm, we remember events that happened a year ago, 2 years ago, and the pictures that we are shown can be horrific and they mark our brains and stay there. And yet, despite these events, people just get on with their lives. Mm-hmm. People don't stop going to school, they don't stop going to work, they don't stop going to parties and having different friends from different cultures, from different backgrounds. So that sometimes I have more in common with a woman from the Congo than I have with the woman that lives on the other side of the street to me. I mean, ultimately, we're human beings born into families where we have people that we love, where we are loved. I think I always say a smile is international. I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, it comes down to basic human nature,
expression.
And
mm-hmm,
then the rest is dialogue. And I think it's exciting and interesting to learn how different people do different things, not just from different countries. Even moving from one side of Malta to another, there are different cultures, mm-hmm, and it takes time to adjust at times. I'm living in Sijiri, where everyone gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning. This is a shock. But this is how we learn to live together, mm-hmm, by being open, first and foremost. And in being open, we can learn to take the best, mm-hmm, from each other's culture as well.
Mohammed, what is your perception? I'll go this another way. How do you think Maltese people look at you? Look at you in a general term. You look at young people like you, who are immigrants. How do they feel about the fact that you are there? What do you think they think?
Actually, many, you know, you find, if you go to any community, you find different people, different culture. You find there must be people who, you know, they understand the feelings you have. They understand how difficult the life is from your side, because it is not that just intentionally. Just now you're working, you're here, you know, you just leave your country, you risk your life the way we risk our life to go somewhere just because of maybe some other reason, you know, because of just like that, you just decided to go. You know, it's not easy. But some people understand. But some people, you know, you point some, they don't understand it. It makes me to remember something. I was in St. Julia one time with a friend of mine. He's Maltese, because I have a lot of friends who are Maltese, you know. Okay. We are sitting down to drinking something. So some people, when African guy come with somebody, it seems like he took him to work for him. Maybe that was the first day. I don't know exactly the reality, but I was just sitting down. So we are talking, just chatting. Maybe they want to do something there, maybe carry something, or they are waiting for the car to come so they will load something. They buy Coca-Cola, you know. They were drinking. My mind just, you know, go there to listen. We are discussing, but I listen to what they are saying. Just caught up. He said to him, the Maltese guy just asked him. He said, my friend. He said, how? He asked him just because that's what I had. I don't know the beginning of the conversation that I just had. He said,
part of it.
Yeah, part of it. He said, how old are you? He said to the African guy. I don't know, he was joking or anything. He said to him, now I can't remember. Maybe I'm 100 or 200 years, you know? So I was about to laugh, but I don't want them to understand, because if they understand that I'm listening to what they're saying, they will cut the conversation. So the guy still don't care about what he said, give him the answer, maybe wrong or right. He still asked him, he said, how did you come to Malta? He said, I come to Malta by horse. So again I laugh. So but I don't want to still, you know, them to understand me. Okay. He said, what did you mean by horse? How did you cross the Mediterranean Sea? He said, how do everybody come here? And how do people used to cross the Mediterranean Sea? I come the way everybody can. So still this guy did not stop, and this one he did not stop giving an answer. He still asked him again. He said, okay now. Where are you going from Malta now? If you leave Malta, where are you heading to? He said, I'm not going anywhere. You understand? I'm not going anywhere because I was in the Mediterranean Sea. Your people met me inside the sea and tell me that I should come. It's a very nice place. I should come here. I should come and stay in Malta. And now they bring me. So look at you. You bring me to come and upload something just because of this today. Tomorrow you will not take me to work with you. So okay, from there I will. If I stay here, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to make my family here. I'm going to make my house here. I'm going to do everything here. So he said, Alba Madonna.
All right, that's really media friendly language, but
when he said like that, so the guy started laughing. The African guy started laughing. He said, "Please, I'm sorry. I was just joking with you. Okay, I don't mean it. If they can give me my paper today, I will leave this country. I was not having a plan to come here. You understand?" So he started explaining to him that I should not take it something. He was just joking with him.
Yeah.
That's why you don't mean it.
But this is, I think this is very important that that young people, any immigrant should explain. I think, in a way, I understand that at times, not in a way, I do understand that Maltese people may have this fear.
Yeah. Or,
I think, as you said, Maria, it's created by other factors. It's created by the media. It's created by different things.
Fear,
but there is an issue of people needing to explain. I think that's legitimate. That's fair.
You know, what I think is the problem. Many people, you know, they may ask you, like to know why you left your country. You understand?
Yes, yes.
They may like to know the problem you have. But some of us believe that even if I tell you my story, it cannot do anything to me. It cannot help me in any way. So I don't think it is necessary that I should give you my story. But the only thing, let's just be friends. I'm a human being, you're a human being. I have a problem, that's why I left my country.
Mm-hmm.
But my case, my personal problem is between me and the commission who are responsible for it. Mm-hmm. This is why some people don't like even, you know...
Because there are things we need to respect. There's privacy.
Yeah. That is it. So at times some you know, find some stories. It's not even easy to tell somebody your story just like that. It's not easy because you're feeling something. It's dangerous even to you there. If you tell him this is why I left my country and other things. And when you finish telling the story, sometimes your own, it will, you know, come back to your mind. So you start, you know, feeling somehow bad. So that's why some people don't like it. You just, like to keep it with them and the commission who are responsible for it, to tell them and, you know, that's what I understand. Some of us, but some people like to, you know, explain, this is where I come. This, but how many people are you going to tell?
Yes.
This is
I think people need to respect that.
Yeah.
That. It's not always easy to say these stories. No, I mean, they're not nice stories. Experiencing
stories.
A journey where we are at times traumatized, going on a plane for a holiday, now let alone you are coming from a country that's taking ages, and you're seeing people fall by the side, by the roadside, and there's nothing you can do except just keep walking, hoping that it won't happen to you. So we need to respect that as well. Maria, what about young people? What's happening to young immigrant people? Are they, so most of them stay in detention, or do they, or has government changed that position? And what happens then after detention? What's the next move? They're out. They do what? They stay in Malta. They settle. They leave. What happens?
Up until anyone who arrives, what we call unaccompanied minors. If somebody arrives on his own up until the age of 18,
all right,
then they're recognised as a particularly vulnerable group, and their release from detention is speeded up, and they are housed in a smaller residential home for unaccompanied minors.
Okay.
Those people that fall over the 18 would have to remain in detention until their
papers are sorted,
asylum request has been decided. Vulnerability is a funny word, really, because ultimately going through something like that, aren't all these people vulnerable? The migratory process in itself already puts these people in a vulnerable position, or more vulnerable to other things, perhaps. Mohammed said a couple of times that we'd never wanted to come to Malta, and we can't leave. I think this is something that's important as well. There's the what we call the Dublin II, which means that you can only apply for asylum once within the EU, and you have to remain. You cannot then apply for asylum in a second EU country. So we hear many stories of people trying to leave. Well, there is no choice, because you arrive in Malta, so you apply for asylum in Malta. Okay. You cannot then say, fill up the boat and let me carry on going to Italy, as many people want to. They have to apply for asylum at the first port of call. So once they've applied for asylum in Malta, they cannot, like I said, go to Italy or Sweden or wherever. So you do hear stories of people trying to leave Malta, and I know many people that have tried to leave Malta once, twice, three times.
And it happens again.
They will be sometimes irregularly. We've seen it on the press, and sometimes even regularly. But they will be sent back to Malta. Basically, their fingerprints are taken at the beginning when they arrive here, and the fingerprints will be taken again in a different country, and from the fingerprints they will know where the person first applied for asylum, so they'll be sent back to Malta. And this is why people are remaining in Malta, despite the fact that they would like to go elsewhere. In terms of what happens upon release from detention, the majority of people are placed in an open centre. We have different open centres on the island, the two largest being Morris Open Centre and the tent village in Halfar. And then we have some smaller homes for unaccompanied minors or for families as well. Some people move into the community quite quickly, and either share accommodation with others, or some actually manage to rent on their own. Because they find jobs. Mm. Employment is an issue. We know that there is exploitation. Then I think the degree to how quickly and to what extent you can integrate is very much on the individual.
Mm.
Language, education,
determination, motivation,
and physical and mental strength as well, having gone through so much already.
It's even tough listening to it, let alone going through it. Let's have a bit of a music break, and we'll get back to you after that. Mohammed, this is an interesting journey you're taking us into. Unfortunately, time really goes by very quickly. Where do you see yourself? I mean, where do you see young people? More than yourself, I'm really interested in generalizing here. I'm interested to know where do you see young people who've been through this experience going? Are they successful? Are there successful stories after all this, or is it just one big tragedy from beginning to end?
You know, when I look at, you know, around the way so many of our brothers, I mean, so many people that we live in together, the life completely, I would say, maybe is gone. I don't know, because... Yeah. I understand a little bit. I speak English, and I you know, understand things, how to move with people, how to stay with people. Some they have, you know, they don't have the experience completely like that. So when you come and look at their life, you find that it's terrible still, you know. They don't have anything to do because they don't even speak English. They don't understand the Maltese language. And not even thinking of going to school maybe to learn the language, you know. And the work, which work you will go and be doing, how are you going to be, you know, continue with your life and, you know, other things. So I don't have anything, you know, I cannot say anything about it because it is, you know, terrible still. Because I didn't see anything there. Some people depend on going, you know, to get some £21 that they normally collect after 2 weeks to get it. That's how they survive with their life. So that's how they are living. See many of them like that. I don't know when it will change. No, I don't know.
But you still remain quite a positive person yourself. You are quite positive. I mean, you manage to see the silver lining. You manage to see that there is a bit of a future. You're working towards that, apparently.
Future about changing in.
Well, that's. Your life keeps improving.
My life? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I am immigrant. I migrated from my country. When I was in my country, I told you first time I was living okay. I'm working fine. I have my office. I have everything. I am doing my things fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have any problem of maybe going to be telling somebody, depending on somebody to tell me, give me something or other things. I have my experience. I mean, technically, you know, I can do what I want to do. So I feel that then when I had the problem, my plan was not to come and to other, you know, to leave my country and go to somebody, defend on him, telling me that, please help me, please give me. Mm-hmm. I, you know, have a problem. That's why I left my country. And, you know, when I come here, I was not thinking of defending that government should give me or somebody should give me. All I need is to be protected. When I am protected, if I have the protection, I have what I know what I will do. I have things to do. I have, you know, my things to pick up and to continue with my life until, you know, the time my problem is settled.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maria, very quickly, just in one sentence, one, two things we need to do to see an improvement in this whole issue, in this whole challenge that we're facing with youths who are
listen. I mean, just listen. I mean, we listened to Muhammad today. He said, give me my protection and I have the skills, I have the resources, I can do this.
Avec, thanks goes to my guests for making this program. It has been an insightful and reflective experience. I invite our youth through their political and social movements to react to what is happening to their peers and call out in favor of social justice and democracy, even if the discomfort may not be a direct experience of theirs. This brings us to an end. I invite you to keep listening to Campus FM, which has its own way, its own unique way, I would say, of satiating your appetite for stimulating your thinking. See you soon.